probably the greatest and most renowned sports figure of our time. He makes greedy owners, shoe companies, television executives, and the sports public pay up like no one else ever before. We have come to need him many, many, many more times than he needs our money, and he doesn't even act that way. He has unparalleled leverage in entertainment. His name is Michael Jordan. All along in this program, we've been using the word leverage. And now we're going to use leverage in its most pronounced way and add it to our persuasion formula. If you remember, we have connection, gaining of trust, value, personalizing benefit. We just discussed urgency, which is accelerating that value. So now it's important to recognize those three pieces together give us an equation. The level of connection that we have, plus the level of value that we've generated, plus the level of urgency that exists, will give us a state of affairs in a sale, in a business, and in an overall company, and in a marketplace that we call leverage. So we've been talking about leverage all along, and leverage is really the heart of this program. So let's look at some definitions. For some perspective, the dictionary defines leverage as positional advantage or the action or mechanical leverage of a lever. You remember that in school, the lever and the fulcrum to move heavy weight or to move or lift. So those are definitions you can find in the dictionary, but in a sales mind's way of thinking, a sales mind defines leverage as, on the left side, how much effort and skill it takes to produce, on the right side, massive results in the form of attracting transactions. So naturally, what a sales mind is trying to do is to leverage their time and their energy and their resources to produce massive results. Now, in selling terms again, leverage is simply this combination of perceived value, you know, how much or how little, plus urgency, and then plus that connection we have that gives us some type of position in a specific transaction or with an entire account. And it's where the sales mind, they sense they're at in getting this business or not. It's the sense of leverage that they've worked hard to gauge and understand. And to fully understand leverage, a person really has to understand this inherent struggle, first of all, between the buyer and the seller, this economic tug of war, because the buyer and the seller both have motives and they're opposite. Let's look first of all at the buyer's simple motives. The buyer wants as much value as possible and always wants to pay the least possible. Well, it's opposite for you, the sales mind who represents the seller. You know, we want to receive as much money as possible and give up the least amount of value in terms of product or cost. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's very important to understand those are real motives. Those are as much human nature as anything. I guess the only thing wrong is when you, the sales mind, don't realize that that's going on at all times. That's a state of affairs, a state of mind between the two parties. You know, the buyer always knows that's going on. They always knows they want to pay a little and get a lot. And certainly that could give them a transactional advantage. So let's examine leverage in two ways. And it works in two ways. Number one, it works emotionally, where you have a relationship and you can utilize relationship leverage or trust to create enough financial leverage to have a transaction. Or then secondly, pure financial leverage, where there is unquestionable, validatable business value that can also then create emotional desire for a buyer to transact. Now, it's always most powerful to have a strong mix of both of those items. So, as an extension of leverage, consider it this way. Remember, leverage is always perceived before the sale and then evaluated constantly after there is a customer relationship. So remember, people are trying to figure out, you know, how much leverage they do or don't have with you and vice versa before a sale. And then after you have an account, they're always weighing, you know, how much do we really need this vendor and this product? There's nothing wrong with that. Those are leverage realities. We're We're talking about the issue of leverage in the salesman's business. There are specific accounts, there are specific sales, and their customers. This is really the heart of the Sales Mind program, the skill of persuasion to attract transaction to you, not to have to push to get it. Now, leverage overall, and I call this cumulative leverage, or the accumulation of various pieces of leverage, has six specific dimensions. And each of those dimensions has pieces. So if in so far in this program you haven't been making notes, certainly get out your pencil now and jot down these categories and subcategories as notes so that you can get your hands around the most important issue of the sales mind, how to use desire power and then persuasion power to generate leverage in your sales business. The first of the six dimension, of course, and we've talked in length about this, is your own conviction and belief of what you're trying to achieve in life and business and with customers being greater than your doubts. Secondly is, we'll examine this in a moment, is the level of leverage gained by team cooperation and alignment with all of the departments in your company and people working as a team. Our third dimension is the quality of leverage in each specific sale or account. Number four is what I call pre-decision price leverage, that state of leverage between buyer and seller that exists in terms to gain a certain price or to agree to price just prior to a decision. Number five is then another dimension of leverage, which is the quantity of total business in your pipeline that you've put together through advertising and marketing and personal contact and telephone calls and exposure. Because if you don't have enough prospects and customers to leverage, I call this wide leverage, enough people in your overall base of business or your pipeline, you're going to be in trouble as you try to gain a sense of leverage with each one. And then finally, number six is converting and using leverage to convert the decision into and from negotiation, ultimately into a transaction. So there are six dimensions of leverage we're going to examine, primarily going through two through six, because we've talked about your own purpose and belief. So we're going to pick up with leverage piece number two, team cooperation. First of all, of course, again, there's leverage on yourself, your own desire power. But now, secondly, is the issue of team cooperation. A sales mind is a very cooperative person. They cooperate with managers and service people, office people, administrative people, technical people in other departments, so that they're doing their best to create maximum team impact and leverage of resources. It obviously makes a lot of sense to realize that if a company, by its departments and its functions, are in harmony, they generate greater value and ultimately leverage when they're dealing with buyers. You'll never hear a sales mind say, yeah, they blew it again in the warehouse. The sales mind is going to try to find a way to make sure that doesn't happen by working with management, going out and making friends in the warehouse, whatever it takes, because cooperation is harmony and it's synergy of resources. And it's just really foolish and it's frictional to think about it any other way. So let's look at cooperation in two dimensions. One is actually very simple. It's being in alignment with your company's marketing, advertising, and promotion. A sales mind has to clearly understand what its company's products are, what its services are, and what value they have. The messages from the sales mind have to match those intended messages from the company. And marketing and sales have to be in alignment. The sales mind makes certain that they are. And then secondly is, there's harmony and cooperation with, and I mentioned this earlier, with other internal departments. Again, that's warehouse, that's office administration, shipping, whatever it is. Be in harmony with not just the manager in the department, but every employee that you can. Be a friendly person. Don't be standoffish just because you're in sales. Make friends with people. They'll do things for you if you are. They'll do things to hurt you or omit things that you need if you're not. So there's harmony with the company's marketing and promotion, and then there's personal harmony with you, with people, personnel in other departments. That's what cooperation is all about. Our third aspect of leverage is the quality of each leverage in each sale. That's each leverage position within a sale. Now, quality leverage is very simply this. It's the relationship between the weight of the seller's desire, that's yours, versus and with the weight of the buyer desire. You know, regardless of whatever type of leverage we're talking about, whether it's known or unknown, a sales mind realizes there's a starting point, number one, and then secondly, there is a progressive chronology of all leverages from the point of contact, ultimately up to a transaction. So the key question is, you know, for you, the seller, could you walk completely away from a business deal because it's not on the right terms or you've got to cut too much price to have it? I hope you can because, you know, negotiation is either it's not necessary, it's certainly not profitable, or it's not timely if you're first not considering leverage. So the quality of your leverage consistently in each sale is a combination of a number of things. It's market forces, competition, relationships, personal confidence, character, communication by you, perceived value, how much coverage do you have? So what we're going to do is examine quality leverage in two dimensions. The first is beginning leverage, and the second is progressive leverage. Let's look at beginning leverage. It also has four pieces. So every sale has four pieces or dimensions of beginning leverage that affect the success of every element that happens after contact. Those four pieces are, and the first is obviously your absolute best leverage. You are referred to a potential customer or a prospect that has a need, and immediately they called you, so if you put those together, they should be closable quickly at a great price because you had great beginning leverage. Secondly, this is not quite as good, but it's still good. You become aware that you were referred to a potential customer and that you are the one, though, that has to make the first call. Your leverage is down a little bit. It's still closable at a good price, but that's still pretty good leverage. Obviously, both of those are referral situations. One called you, you called one. Now, thirdly, and this leverage is okay, and you're going to have to do some work to gain more in the form of a presentation, value, those issues, is a potential customer saw an ad, they saw a mailer, and they called in, but keep in mind, and they might tell you this, they're shopping. So although they called in, you know, you weren't an exclusive source. You're going to have to work to get this closable and develop some angles of leverage. And then four is the hardest work of all. You had to make the initial contact and initiated all the elements of this potential sale. Obviously, all steps in this program and in the sales process are necessary. Now, in our third major category of quality leverage, again, this has two sub-points. One is beginning leverage, and now the second is what I call progressive leverage, which is basically whatever leverage existed at point of contact, now, hopefully, you're doing the things necessary to have that leverage increase in your favor to draw a transaction to you. Now, remember, prospect leverage is all perceived. They don't know you yet, while customer leverage is actual. There's some scorecard, there's some past relationship for which to assess this leverage. Now, quality progressive leverage has a number of elements. Progressive simply means we're trying to take whatever state it is now and simply move it more intensely. The first thing we have to do is make a long list of those possible elements of leverage that could have urgency associated with them. Now, jot these down. All of these might apply to your business, but these are certainly not all. Number one is the state of your current relationship. Is that non-existent at all, or is that very good? Secondly, how much uniqueness do you have in the marketplace? Not unique at all to very unique. Third is, are you niched well in your marketplace? That's a leverage variable if it's used right. Four is, inventory. Is inventory on the part of the buyer needed? And that becomes a leverage issue. Five is, how much impact did you have at contact? If you have low contact impact, that's low leverage. If your contact impact was high and you were well received, then that's a high leverage component. Added value specifics are the things you present that add value, creating more leverage. Number seven, does the buyer have any time or fiscal or holiday urgencies in which they have to order? Obviously, if they do, that urgency variable will move more highly. Credibility, do you have credibility and testimonials and statistics that back up your position? That's an element that gives you leverage or not. Number 9, what is your service record? If it's good, you've got leverage. Number 10 is, what is your market share in an industry? What is your market share in an area? That tells you what your leverage position can be with a prospect or customer. Number 11, pricing advantages. Do you have a wide array of programs of pricing that give you more options to offer your customer as a component of your leverage? Number 12, certainly, are you extending credit to them or a line of credit? If you are, that's natural, obvious leverage. 13, do you have marketing support that's helping you, the sales mind, individually tell your message? If you've got great marketing support, that's high leverage. Number 14, are you, for instance, if you're a manufacturer and this is a distributor client, are you using and sharing co-op dollars to help them advertise, perhaps matching a dollar for every tool? That's obviously leverage. Number 15, do you have a decision maker in the organization that's a friend? If you do, that's leverage. 16, do you notice that there's desire that's just evident in the sale? If there is, that's leverage. 17, do you have a program where you will consider volume of purchase for how much margin you take? In other words, if the customer will order more, you'll drop the price per unit sum. If you've got that flexibility, that's leverage. 18, do you have great staff relationships within your own company that can leverage multiple ways to communicate and offer service to the client? If you do, that's leverage. Number 19, hey, do you have personal financial strength? If you have personal financial strength, you can walk away from business deals that don't pay you good commissions or don't give you good terms. And then finally, number 20, but this is not the only one, it's just the final on our list, is the financial strength of your company. If your company is strong financially, it probably provides an environment in which it has a strong value position and does not want you to cut price. So all you have to do is go down that list and focus on what is the state of that element of those 20 now as I see it, as I could assess it, and then make every attempt to try to move those leverage variables that apply to your circumstance, to your business, from weak to strong. That is what is called progressive quality leverage. It progresses leverage by component from weak to strong. Let's keep it in perspective. Overall, cumulative leverage has 6 dimensions, and we've discussed the first 3. Your own leverage on yourself. 2 is team cooperation leverage. 3 is the quality of the leverage in each specific sale. Now, our 4th key dimension, which we're going to focus on now, is what I call pre-decision price leverage. Pre-decision price leverage, or PDPL. And what this means is, just prior to every decision, whether it's for you or it's deferred out into the future or it's against you, it's you arrive somewhere at an existing state of leverage. So in other words, you've done all this work, you've proposed, you've presented, you've offered pricing, perhaps you've gone back and forth. There's just about to be a decision point. At that moment is a state of tug of war of price leverage. Now, there's a couple key first issues you have to understand about pre-decision price leverage. First of all, is the condition when you know the pre-decision price leverage before going into a closing appointment or call. Obviously, that's a huge advantage because this allows for you to still influence. You can still send things. You can still handle specific objections. You can still make attempts to boost value in one last chance to buoy that value before negotiating pricing in person. The bottom line is you can prepare, you can influence, and you can negotiate. That's a big advantage. But most of the time is the second scenario. When you don't know the pre-decision price leverage before going into the closing appointment or call. I mean, that's obvious. Do you think the buyer, to their best ability or knowledge, wants you to know how they feel about your pricing? Of course not, because their goal is to get you down in price. So what happens is you're going to find that out in the call at a pre-negotiation phase. Now, this moment is really the moment of truth for all of your preparation and all of your sales mind ability to sell value and your staying power. Now, here you just simply have to respond with the best of ability, with the best of what's known, and negotiate that pricing with poise. So there's PDPL, the price leverage known before going in, and then there's the price leverage or PDPL that is not known before going in. These are key points of awareness. Ultimately, the price leverage and the pricing that you accomplish and transact are going to equate to four levels. Number one, and we're going to go from best to worst. Number one is what I call blue chip leverage or highest price. The bottom line is you've secured the best pricing available because this state of leverage exists with skill and with unique products and powerful companies. And as we mentioned, when you get call-in business and when you have a superior individual performance, you know, you think about these great athletes or these tycoons, you know, a Deion Sanders, a Michael Jordan, a Ted Turner, you know, big companies like Coca-Cola. I mean, the bottom line is they have leverage because the seller is stronger. The seller of product or services is stronger and more valuable in a negotiation than is the buyer's position to want to resist them. Now, secondly, is not quite as good, but it's still pretty good, is what I call just above the pack leverage, which yields you medium to high price. You know, you're perceived with a small competitive advantage, so you better get in there and close that transaction now while your position is strongest. That's just above the pack leverage. Number three is, as we descend down the totem pole, is what I call arbitrary or really lack of leverage. And to this, you're obviously going to yield medium to low price. You know, the bottom line is the buyer perceives you as equal to other vendors. And, you know, they're thinking, you know, what's the difference between you? It's an apple, and you're going to be in a price war to close that business. And then number four is the worst case scenario. You're just going to have to do the best you can. I call this, you must have it at any price leverage, which the yield is obviously low price. And the bottom line here is you or your company, you know, you'll take the sale, even at a razor-thin margin, just to get some cash into the business. You know, this is really desperation at work, and everybody's days are numbered when there's no profit margin because there's no perceived value. However, there are six circumstances that may warrant low price leverage, and here they are quickly. Number one is to introduce a loss leader in a market as a deliberate strategy to put a stake in the ground to ultimately get market share. Secondly, to gain a blue chip client that has benefits just beyond the initial margin. I mean, you want to grow this client and be on your customer list. Three is to gain market information on the satisfaction of your product or for a case study, a model, or a testimonial. Number four is to reestablish momentum for perhaps a slumping salesperson or in a new territory. And then five is, you know, to finish off a sales goal of merit. Sometimes you come down to the end of a period, a year, a month, you just got to have a final sale. That may qualify. Or number six simply is to launch a new product. So these, basically, this whole discussion is four levels of pricing that your leverage is going to yield. The fifth component in our cumulative leverage is what is really the quantity of leverage in your overall business. Now, I specifically call this type of leverage coverage, and we'll go into this in Module 11 coverage. But basically, there's overall two kinds of leverage. There's what I call the deep kind, which is descends vertically, which represents the leverage in each sale. Then there's the wide kind, which represents all of the customers you're applying individual leverage to in your business. So there's deep leverage and wide leverage. So the discussion of wide leverage is basically the total quantity or amount of prospects and customers you apply leverage to in any one time in your pipeline. And basically, you know, if you have a small universe of people, you're going to have low leverage. If you have a large universe of people, you'll have large leverage. And, you know, on one hand, with a large universe, you have to create it through high contact activity. And then on the other hand, you have to learn how to create and the methods of high contact activity. The main thing I want you to do is take an oath personally to have high personal contact leverage or wide leverage. Here's the oath. I, that's you. I will prospect, network, database, trade show, advertise, promote, follow up, market, and enjoy the high emotional and financial leverage that comes from coverage. More about that in the section on coverage. Our sixth and final component of overall cumulative leverage in your sales business as a sales mind is number six, converting the decision. And that has a number of pieces to it. We're going to look at this primarily in a couple ways. The first, we're going to describe the general elements of transacting. And then secondly, we're going to talk about the three-step flow in a closing sequence. So the sales mind constantly practices this concentration and orchestration of sales events toward finality. You know, it's not just closing and it's not just getting a decision, it's the diligence also to make sure that that decision becomes a financial transaction, even if you have to walk it through your own company. The decision, though, really, for a sales mind, is the moment of climax in the sale. It's that magical moment when the validity of all their sales claims matches the customer's belief in those claims and in the sales mind, signified by a desire to transact. So let's look at, first of all, some of these general elements of transacting decisions. First of all, you know, you've got to be able to talk comfortable language of money. Business is money. You've got to be able to talk percentages and money and ratios and dollars and amortization and years and not be afraid of that, because if you can't talk money, you're not a sales mind. You have to also understand the nature of the anatomy of transactions. They involve budgets and times of years and release procedures and acceptance criteria and specifications and purchasing people. I mean, if you're not willing to deal with that, you're missing a key element of an overall transaction. Also, in your mindset is to understand the value of cash and time on money and interest rates and time and yield, and also investment judgment and risk. Everybody buying from you is making some kind of a risk decision based on their judgment of the value of your program. Then there's the role of emotion in the sale. There's also, you know, a past transaction relationship. If you have a customer, they have transacted with you in a certain recipe and a certain model in the past. You better know that. You know, is there, as we've talked about earlier, is there urgency in the sale? Are you dealing with a final decision maker that can really finalize and authorize an agreement? Are you taking into account in your offering trading off volume for margin? In other words, if they buy more, they get each unit for less. Is your program, and in the interest of transacting, is it unique? And most of all, is the transaction on the table immediate? So a sales mind, first of all, understands every element of what goes into a transaction, so that secondly, they can do the second most important thing, is take that transaction through a flow of three stages. Number one is, and we spent a lot of discussion in this module, is the skill of leverage position. Leverage position, that's all those things you've done to weigh a sale in your favor. Now, second is negotiation, and third is ultimately transaction. So let's go back to negotiation, step two, all right? We're in a position, step one, of a leverage position to, secondly, negotiate. And it's very important, a couple things in negotiation. One is consider the span of all items you're negotiating in a sale, put those on the table with the buyer, and make your very best attempt to singly negotiate each item, singly negotiating terms, singly negotiating interest rates, negotiating volume, singly add-ons, singly supplies, singly shipping, singly negotiating training, negotiating service singly, any legal issues singly, length of time, guaranteed renewals. If you'll slow down when you negotiate and negotiate in a tug of war item singly, first of all, you'll give away less, and then obviously you'll gain more. And then finally, the most important goal of any position to negotiation is finally three, transaction. Your mind should be thinking, I'm only negotiating for one reason, and you need to articulate this with your buyer. We're negotiating to transact in the form of a deposit check, a purchase order, an application for line of credit, prepayment in cash, a long-term contract. So the sales mind's focus goes from a leveraged position into active negotiation of single line items to the fulfillment by transaction of money. That's what it is to ultimately leverage transactions.